Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Web Sleuth Radio, where each week we anxiously await to see if my ex-husband discovers me using his computer for my show. Well, actually, this week my ex is out of town, and he did give me permission to use his computer. In fact, my ex said this, "Of course, anything for you, my dear ex-wife. In fact, we should have stayed married. I was a fool." Okay, he didn't say that, but someday he never will. Let's get to it, shall we? Tonight we have two topics, the Anthony trial and the search for Michelle Lee. Our guests will be the amazing Mark Klass, our much-loved sleuther on the side, and of course, my wonderful co-host, Kimster. Let me ask you something. Do you ever get the feeling that Jose Baez is going to pretty much have his ass chewed off by the time this trial is over? My 14-year-old son knows that you can't spring surprises on the prosecution. I think I'm going to send him to Florida to help Jose. Is this incompetence a setup so Casey can appeal using the "I have an idiot for an attorney" clause? I think that's the legal language they use. Anyway, something to think about. I mean, I don't know. And Dr. Spitz, Dr. Spitz was spitzing mad. I've waited years to use that line. Now, if you remember, Dr. Spitz was an expert witness in the Phil Spector trial. He was for the defense, and he blew up on the stand back then, sort of like he did on Saturday in Florida. But on the way out of the courtroom, this is very cool, Dr. Spitz did congratulate Mr. Ashton on his cross-examination, and I think that shows that Dr. Spitz is professional and very, very gracious. I thought that was a neat thing to do. We'll talk about how Web Sleuth member AZ Lawyer uncovered the non-witness that Jose Baez tried to throw out there as some sort of co-conspirator with George based on some goofy phone records. AZ Lawyer knew years ago that there was nothing to it. It was just some couple of numbers that were transposed, and basically it was a wrong number. George did not call Vasco Thompson, much to the dismay of the defense. And finally, I want to state that those lunatics that are screaming and fighting for a place in line to watch the trial did not come from Web Sleuth. No way. This whole trial is just, it's getting nuttier by the day. Now, don't get me wrong, because I agree with Linda Kenny Bodden in that I think there is a chance that Casey might be found not guilty, or at least a hung jury. But every time Jose Baez opens his mouth, I'm less and less convinced of this. Now, before we get to the Anthony trial, we need to talk about a case that is not getting anywhere near the attention it should be, and that is missing nursing student Michelle Lee. And Class Kids was in Haywood, California this weekend searching for Michelle, and right now I'd like to welcome Mark Klass to Web Sleuth Radio. Mark, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, Trish.
Oh, great. If you could speak up just a little bit for me. Mark, you and Brad Dennis, as well as the rest of the search team, were in Hayward, California, looking for Michelle. And I know nothing was found, unfortunately, but let's back up a little bit. This case is very important. Tell us the story of Michelle. What happened when she went missing? What do the police think? Just kind of give us a capsule, if you will, of her story.
Okay, sure. First of all, though, Trish, I just want to congratulate you on your new show. You're a consummate professional, and it sounds like the best of AM radio talk, quite frankly.
Thank you.
Well, it's true, and you know that I don't bullshit you.
Well, you don't.
Let's talk about Michelle. Michelle Lee was a 26-year-old, or is a 26-year-old nursing student who disappeared during a break. At the Kaiser Hospital in Hayward, California, at 7 p.m. on the 27th of September. Michelle told somebody she had to go get something out of her car and has not been seen since. For about a week, law enforcement was handling this as a missing persons case, but then they suddenly changed their minds and reclassified it as a homicide, but they did that without a body. They said it was based on information they had collected, but this is information they refused to share with anybody. It was just the day after that I received a call from one of Michelle's relatives saying that they just didn't know where to go. They didn't know what to do. They were just stunned by this revelation, and it basically paralyzed their bodies and their minds. And being in the neighborhood in Northern California here, I arranged to meet with the family the next day, at which point we came up with a couple of strategies. The first thing we did is we decided that we would create a family statement rejecting the law enforcement consensus that the girl was now deceased. Secondly, we noted during that statement that there was a real lack of communication between the family and law enforcement, and that the family did not appreciate hearing these kinds of things on the evening news. We then decided that we would create a prayer vigil for Michelle the next day, and then a few days later on a Saturday, last Saturday, we would do a flyer distribution just to get the community out, et cetera. The family then asked us if we would, the family, and I should explain who the family is. The family consists of her father, Sonny Lay, her brother, Michael Lay, a variety of cousins, aunts, and uncles, most of whom live down in the San Diego area. They decided they wanted to do a search, and they wanted to do it this weekend. And we told them that certain things needed to happen. First of all, we could only search areas there was a probability we might find something. We can't just start arbitrarily searching the hills and valleys of Northern California. It's just too vast an area. So in order for that to occur, they needed to repair their relationships with law enforcement and get law enforcement to talk to class kids search and rescue. That was accomplished. And last Wednesday, we went and had a very productive meeting with Hayward PD. It seems that most of those wounds have been healed, that there is open communication between the entities now, and they shared some very good information with class kids. We then decided that we would do the search, and we have then spent the last 3 days doing that, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And what I can tell you, Tricia, I can tell you several things. Number one, we got a terrific response from the community. There were in excess of 450 people that came out over the course of the three days to help us search for Michelle. We had people coming from as far away as San Diego, our good friends from the Amber Dubois case down there, from Orange County, the G.I. Joe search team in Orange County, and then, you know, blanket support from the community at large. We did over 30 searches. We covered everything that the Hayward PD wanted us to cover in the first day, and we've since been developing our own timelines and our own information so that we can continue this. But it now is in a transition. Tricia, as you know, Brad Dennis, our great search and rescue director, lives in Pensacola, Florida, and he'll be flying back to Pensacola tomorrow, and it just is impractical for him to come out for weekend searches every week. So we've been working very hard with the family to transition into them leading the search this coming week. And to that end, although we physically cannot be here, neither Brad, Violet, nor I can be here, we've made our lines available to them, and we've given them some other resources that we've utilized over the years in the Bay Area, one being Kelby and Eva Jones, our brother and sister-in-law who have been with Violet and I from the very beginning, and another being Danny Domingo, a police lieutenant from Richmond, California, who has been working with us since we did the search for his own niece, Zianna Fairchild, back in 1999. So that's where it stands right now. Law enforcement relationships are repaired. We're very good with them. The family is motivated. We've helped give them some direction. We think that we've done a very good thing here, and we've done a very good thing here in Hayward, and hopefully this will all result in a resolution. But if I can say one final thing, and I know that yes. You're just chomping a bit to get in here.
No, you go.
The one thing that I need to say is that because of the relationship that you and I have created ever since we met at the side of the church in the Elizabeth Smart case in the year 2000, I believe it was 2000, we've been able to supply water to the rescuers, to the searchers. We've been able to supply food to the searchers, and we've been able to put together this infrastructure that is really, I think, unsurpassed. So I just got to salute you, and I got to salute all the great web sleuthers out there for the wonderful ongoing support that you guys give and continue to give to the Class Kids Foundation and to the families of the people that we're out there looking for.
Well, thank you, Mark. And yeah, let me just say the members of Web Sleuths, absolutely amazing. They're the ones that do all the work. We've had people in this particular case in the search for Michelle. We had one Web Sleuth member go to Costco and buy a whole bunch of energy bars and took them to the search center just on his own. And he said to me, I'm part of the Web Sleuths family. So, I can't take really any credit for this, Mark. It's the wonderful people of Web Sleuths all coming together. And we love Class Kids, and we will be there for you anytime, any place. All you need to do is just say the word, and we are there for you because we appreciate what you do and what Class Kids does all over the country and all over the world, actually. Let me talk about Michelle for a moment. They've talked about a person of interest, and this is very bizarre. Can you comment on that, or is that something we're not supposed to talk about?
Well, there are several persons of interest, but there's one gal who surfaced early on that I can't talk about things we found out, but I can tell you that more and more she looks like somebody who really does deserve the attention that's been paid to her. There seem to be some real issues with this gal, and she seems to have let's just say there do seem to be some real issues with her, and it's looking more and more like she might have some real involvement in Michelle's disappearance, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whatever that is. We still don't know if Michelle is alive or if Michelle is dead. The only thing we know for certain is that Michelle is missing.
Right, and I think you know this better than anybody, Mark. It's that hope that they have to hold on to, that maybe she is alive. And Elizabeth Smart has taught us all that we can't always assume that somebody is dead, because everybody assumed Elizabeth was, and look what happened. So there are those miracles that do happen. Mark, is there a family website? Do you remember what that address is? I don't have it in front of me. I thought I did, but I don't. Do you remember?
Yeah, it's called MichelleLeeMissing.com. MichelleLeeMissing.com. And I would encourage people to go there if they want to follow this story, because they're doing regular posts on it. And people can get updated as to what's gone on, what's planned, and the status of the case.
Exactly. And, Mark, I haven't had a chance to tell you this, so I'll tell you while I'm telling everybody. I took a lot of phone calls this weekend for people with questions about the search for Michelle. And I am telling you, people are so touched and so moved. I can't tell you how many calls from people just crying because they want to find her. So she has touched everybody in her hometown, and I'm hoping we can take this a little bit more nationwide and give Michelle and her family the attention they certainly deserve. And thank you, Mark, for doing all of what you have done for the family. We really appreciate it. Now, Mark, you can stick around, can't you? Because we have so many questions for you, and people are dying to know what you think about the Casey Anthony trial. There are some people that want to ask you about Haley Dunn, so I hope you can stick with us for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Okay, I'll tell you what. What we're going to do now, though, is we're going to bring in a couple of people here. We have a very special guest, Sleuther on the Side. Hi, are you there, my dear?
Hello, Tricia. How are you?
I am great. And, of course, my co-host, the amazing Kimster, administrator extraordinaire. Hi, Kimster.
Hi, and I want to say hi to Sleuther, and I want to say hi to Mark. I am just blessed, Mark, to be able to be on the show with you tonight. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. That's very kind.
And we do have some phone numbers. People can call in with their questions. 1-760-825-0933. Toll-free is 1-877-665-1565. Okay, I want to go to Sleuther on the Side first. Sleuther on the Side has followed the Casey Anthony case since day one. I mean, inside and out. Sleuther on the Side knows these details. Okay, Sleuther on the Side, we need you to tell us about William Rodriguez. He is a taphonomy expert, and that's the study of decaying organisms over time and how they become fossilized. And this was a big deal in the courtroom this week. This was the person who Jose Baez tried to sneak in some information the prosecution didn't have, and Jose got in all kinds of trouble. So why don't you give us a little background on that and tell us you found out something very interesting. So go for it, my dear. Let us know what's going on.
Well, I appreciate that, Tricia. Really, you know, early on in the case, Jose Baez had requested that the JAC, which is the Justice Administration Commission, that they would fund a taphonomy expert for the defense, and they turned him down. But he still has an expert here. He's put on the stand. What I find interesting is that he put him on the stand under the guise of testifying to certain information regarding forensic anthropology. But early on in his questioning, he started deviating and moved on to an area that he did not disclose to the state attorney's office and was eliciting opinions that had not been provided to them. So he tried to pull a fast one, and Judge Perry really, he caught on to that very quickly, and it just kind of goes to show you that early on, Jose Baez was planning on his sneak attack, and he was able to slide it in there. And it's a little disconcerting when you look at the justice system.
Well, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen to Jose Baez? Do you think he's going to get in big trouble over this?
You know, I'm not an attorney, so I can't speak from that perspective. But what I can say is that I don't think that anything will happen until after this case has already reached its conclusion. Because for anything to happen midstream would jeopardize Casey's rights. And so I think that the judge is smart enough, and I think we've all been able to see that this judge is the right judge for the case. He's going to wait to do anything about this until later, and he's going to make sure that during the trial, Casey is protected. But he's kind of giving Jose some guidance, some gentle nudging, some shoving, if you want to put it that way. You need to keep on track here because I've got your number.
Exactly, yeah. Basically, Jose Baez is on notice that he can't get away with any of this. Mark, everybody's dying to know what you think. Give us that Mark class opinion that we all know and love.
Well, I think that Casey Anthony is absolutely pure evil, that what she did to her child, what she's done to her family is unconscionable. And I just really, you know, finally feel very badly for George and Cindy and Lee, because there's no good ending for this for them. There's nothing that can happen in this trial that can give them peace of mind in any way, shape, or form. And you can only come to a situation like that when you're dealing with something that has no redeeming qualities, that doesn't care who or what suffers as a result of their actions, and is willing to basically give everything up on the off chance that there might be an acquittal here.
You're absolutely right. Let's give out the phone numbers again. We do have a couple of open lines, 1-760-825-0933 or 1-877-665-1565 if you'd like to talk to Mark Class. And, Mark, we have a question from Zippity Doodah. And he says, Mr. Class has stated many times that he took a polygraph early on so that law enforcement could get to the truth, eliminate him, and move on into other areas. What does Mr. Class think of George, Cindy, and Lee refusing to take polygraphs?
Well, I think they were trying to protect their daughter and their sister. That's all I think they were trying to do. I think that they realized pretty early on that there were not a lot of good options for them, and that if they were to take a polygraph, that they would then be locked into answers that they might regret at some point in the future.
Kimster and Sleuther on the Side, if you have any questions, feel free to jump in. I don't want to manipulate the whole conversation here, so feel
out. Oh, sure, Tricia, you're the host. It's your show.
Well, it is. I'm giving it out to you. I'm spreading the love here a little bit, or spreading something. Anyway, we do have a question from Lunatic Fringe. Asks, what did Mark think of the testimony of Dr. Spitz? Mark, what did you think?
You know what? I have to pass on this because we've been so involved in Michelle's case these last several days that I haven't been able to give any time at all to the Anthony trial.
Oh well,
so
that
it got by me. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You know what? I can tell you just from what a little bit I know about you, you would have a lot to say about what Dr. Spitz did, because it was interesting, very interesting to say the least. Okay, let's give the numbers out again. Oh, gosh, now listen, this is so unprofessional of me. I'm trying to find my – here we go. It's 1-760-825-0933 or 877-665-1565. Kimster, you had a question or a comment?
Well, I will comment about Dr. Spitz. I don't – often get to watch the trial because of my personal life scheduling, but I did get to watch it yesterday. And I felt that I was very surprised that he was, because before he hit the cross-examination, I was listening to and reading some of the things online about how he was so, you know, highly thought of and everything as a professional, but I thought he was very unprofessional because he tended to, if he had a hard question, then he would say he didn't remember, and I don't think that I believe that. And mm-hmm. if he or his other way out was blaming others. He would say, well, I wouldn't know about why they didn't do that. I'm not a chemist, or, you know, I don't know why they didn't do that because I'm not a this, or an attorney, I think was the other thing he said. And it just seemed like he played what I call the blame game, and he was also kind of hot-headed. I read a comment, and I wish I could remember which poster it was, that had followed the case with the the music guy, the murder case for
Phil Spector. Phil Spector.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And she had followed that case, and she said that he was kind of hot-tempered during that case as well. So I don't think, because of all the other black eyes that the defense has gotten in this trial, I don't think that choosing him was probably the greatest idea. And Sleuther, can you help me with this? I asked this question, I think, and then I didn't get back to the forum to see the answer. But does he tend to be a professional witness for defense teams usually? Is that what he does?
He does. And in addition to that, he you know, everybody was talking on the forum about the fact that he couldn't remember, he couldn't recall, he didn't know that piece of information, he wasn't sure. And what he was doing was trying to cover himself as a professional, expert, paid witness. Now, you know, he says he wasn't paid in this case, but let's, you know, be frank. Payment can come in the form of cash, or it can come in the form of publicity. And he's done a lot of media recently, but he does tend to side with the team that hires him, and that's okay. An expert witness is expected to support the employer, so to speak. But you know, when you are sitting on the stand, I should say, and you're giving opinions that don't make any sense, you really lose credibility, not just with your jury, but you lose credibility with your peers. And I think that he has now probably reached an end to a career that has been, you know, very notorious and very, very successful. But this case, like I've said, this is like the Hope Diamond curse. This case curses anybody who touches it, and I think that this probably will be the one that defines him as he, you know, moves on from here on. Does that make sense?
It does. It
yes,
does. Well, he's 84 years old. Go ahead, Kimster. I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. I saw your comment about the Hope Diamond curse earlier on. I saw that on the forum. That was such a great way of describing it, because look at all the people that have, you know, been hurt by this and been defamed by it. And yeah, that was a very good way of saying that.
You know, I don't begrudge Dr. Spitz, you know, his job, and I don't begrudge him an opinion. But what I do find offensive is when you're a hired opinion, when you're spouting off nonsense and you expect people to believe it, you have to retain some integrity as an expert in order to be believable. And if your jury is laughing, that's not a good sign.
It's not. And from what I understand, yes, jump
in,
please.
Jump in. Listen, there are these hired guns for the defense all over the country. These doctors of questionable repute. And quite frankly, the only time they rear their ugly heads is when the big payment is made and they find themselves on the witness stand for the defense. So I don't know that there's ever irreparable damage done to any of these characters, because they sort of migrate from trial to trial to trial, giving their third-rate opinions without really much concern about their integrity. Hell, if they had integrity, they wouldn't be professional defense witnesses to begin with now, would they?
Very good point. Okay, let's give out the phone number again. Come on, we can take some phone calls. I think there's something wrong with our phones because they light up and then I think they're getting disconnected. 760-825-0933. I think it's the curse of my ex-husband's computer. I'm not sure.
Trisha, it's me. It's apparently me tonight.
It is you. All you, Sleuther, on the side, absolutely.
You want to know, if I could just bring up one point, what I really found to be a defining moment in Dr. Spitz's testimony was the fact that he could not remember the Anthony's name.
He couldn't? Mm-hmm. I missed that.
No.
What happened?
He talked about going to the family and kept trying to delay that answer. Oh, the family, the people involved. He didn't remember the Anthony's name, and twice during testimony confused Casey with Kaylee.
Not good.
What does that tell us?
Not good. It tells us he's 84 years old. He reminds me a lot of my father. I thought of that watching him. I thought, you know, that would be like my dad up there and just end up getting mad and telling everyone to shut up, you know, because that's what, when you get that age, you have a right to do that, just perhaps not on the witness stand, you know. Am I the only one? I feel like I am all alone here except for Linda, Kenny, Bodden, and me. I feel, even with all the mistakes Jose Baez is making, I think there is a chance that Casey might get off, or at the very least, a hung jury. Because I'm telling you, when they go in there to discuss what's what, they're going to have a hard time coming up with first-degree murder. They just are. And I just feel that, I don't know, that's my opinion only. It very well could be wrong, and I take no responsibility for it. Does anybody think that's a possibility?
I do. I believe that the possibility of a hung jury is much greater than the possibility of an acquittal, simply because two things. Number one, they only have to put doubt in the mind of one juror, and doubt can come in various forms. It's extremely subjective. What might be one person's doubt easily could be another person's certainty. And even in our own trial, Tricia, this being the second thing, it was very, very clear to me through all of the testimony, through the very strong case that the prosecution put up, that this guy was as guilty as you could possibly be of every crime for which he had been charged. Yet it took the jury 4 days of deliberation to be able to come to a consensus on that and return with the conviction that we had all expected to be returned after only a couple of hours of deliberation.
And that was Richard Allen Davis, who now is on death row. And
right.
Not to get off topic here, Mark, but do you think he will ever see the death penalty, or is he going to die an old man in prison?
He'll die an old man in prison. The math is really easy here. About number 500 in a state with 700 guys on death row, and they've only executed 13 people in the last 30 years. So,
brother.
Figure it out. Yeah.
Okay, let's take some callers. Let's go to area code 858. Area code 858. You're on the air. 858. Hi,
Trisha.
How are you? Hi.
Hi, Melanie.
How are you, Melanie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You sound a little bit like
question.
You're underwater, but if you have a question. That's okay. Go ahead, my dear.
I have a question regarding Dr. Spitz, and my question is to Mark Klassen, whoever else is out there. How did he get an opportunity to do a second autopsy without any supervision as far as cutting the skull I mean, how did he get in there without Dr. G being in the room as well?
I think, and don't quote me on this, and Mark, maybe you know, but I think they are allowed to do an autopsy without anybody from the prosecution there. That's my understanding.
I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know. I think that they should have the right to be involved in that process, certainly, because they do have to put up a defense, but I certainly don't know the points of law on that.
And see, Mark, that's what I love about you. You admit when you don't know something, I just make it up. And no, and people believe it. I don't get it. No, I can't imagine the prosecution wouldn't be there if they could be. So I'm
right.
thinking that maybe they were allowed not to observe what they were doing. Might have something to do with the fact that they wouldn't want to, you know, let the prosecution have a peek at what they're thinking, would be my guess. Does that answer your question, Melanie?
Right. It doesn't. Just one more quick question.
Sure.
If he did, I mean, he obviously cut the skull, and he testified to the sediment. Why didn't he have it tested? Why didn't he say anything? And we're only hearing about it on the witness stand.
There is the million-dollar question. Sleuther on
it's
the side?
It's not a million-dollar question. It's what I had mentioned before. There are these people that exists solely to be so-called expert defense witnesses, and much of their testimony and much of their science is hocus-pocus, and the only ones that believe them, and you know, that's why it all seems incomprehensible, because it is incomprehensible. Nobody
You're right.
understands what they're saying, but what they're hoping to do is put that doubt in the mind of one juror so that they can get either the hung jury that is the best case scenario, or the hung jury that they're hoping for, or even a best case scenario of an acquittal.
Thank you so much, Melanie. Let's take another phone call. This is area code 636. Area code 636. You're on the air with Mark Klass, Lular on the side, and Kimster. How are you?
I am good, Tricia. How are you?
I'm great. What's your question?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment when you were talking about how you're afraid that Casey might be getting off because there just doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence showing the state's case right now. And I just wanted to remind you of the Scott Peterson case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was much, much less forensic evidence in that case than there is
right.
in Kaylee's. I think there was, like, one single hair of Lacey's possibly that was on, it was a long time ago, but I think it was on Scott's boat cover.
Mm-hmm.
And really, Lacey and Connor's bodies, you know, were so deteriorated, they didn't give a lot of help to forensics right there. So his was a much, much bigger circumstantial case than even, you know, the Kaylee and Casey case here. So just keep the faith because, you know, those jurors came out afterwards and, you know, talked to media, and they said basically what they did is they put together the puzzle from hundreds of pieces of circumstantial evidence plus his demeanor in court, which spoke volumes to them. And I think
you're right.
Quite parallel here. So don't lose the faith. You know, we don't give these people enough credit sometimes for being able to connect the dots. And there might be a few on there that some of the scientific evidence might be way over their head, but I think there's enough people on there that have various backgrounds that are going to be able to help the other jurors connect those dots. And don't give up the hope here. Don't give
oh,
up
you are so sweet.
They have a conviction.
Thank you, and you're absolutely right. Everything you say is absolutely right. Right, Kimster?
Yes, and who is this calling?
This is Tia M. This is Tia M from On Web Sleuth.
Hi, Tia M.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for calling.
I was just kind of hiding in the background trying to stay away from Kimster's ray gun.
I know. She's pretty scary. Mark, you need to watch out for our administrator's ray gun. It's just frightening beyond belief. Well,
but
TM,
you guys
thank
are
you.
Great. Thanks for doing this tonight. It really helps pass those hours when we're just wondering what's going to happen tomorrow morning and
Absolutely.
Trying to throw out the possibilities. So thanks so much for putting the
thank
program on.
Thank you, my dear.
And Mr. Klass, I have the utmost respect for you, sir. Thank you so much for being a part of Web Sleuth here.
Well, yeah, I love Web Sleuth. And I'd like to just pick up, and thank you so much for those kind words. I'd like to just pick a little bit on what you said, and the whole idea of demeanor And, you know, I think one thing that almost everybody can agree on is that Casey's demeanor and behavior has been at odds with the truth from the very beginning. It makes no sense for somebody to respond the way Casey has emotionally responded to everything from the moment Cindy made that 911 call. It's completely inappropriate, and it's an indication that this might be a woman that has no conscience, that really doesn't have the kinds of feelings that the rest of us have. Somebody like Scott Peterson, they parrot what they think people want to see and people want to hear and the emotions that they think that they can get out there. And it's reminiscent of the time that I watched this interview live, Scott Peterson being interviewed by Ted Rollins, working as hard as he could to ultimately squeeze a little tear out during the interview. And just, you could almost see the pride in his face, realizing that he squeezed a tear out, and that obviously showed the real remorse that he felt. And I think you can see that with Casey as well. You know, she's dabs at her eyes, but nobody ever sees any tears. She responds how people might think she wants to respond, but it's hard to tell what she's responding to. Her parents obviously love her, but she has decided that throwing them under the bus and sacrificing them for the good of Casey is better than accepting their love. And I think that we'll continue to see that throughout this trial.
I think you're right, and I do think it will be very interesting after the trial if we can maybe get some in-depth look into who Casey Anthony is and how she was created, just like we did with Scott Peterson. Dr. Keith, I believe it's Ablo, wrote an amazing book about how Scott Peterson became the person he was when he ended up killing Lacey, and I certainly hope we can get to that point with Casey, because it's scary and frightening to think that there are people like that out there. Let's take another caller. This is area code 203. Area code 203, you're on the air with Mark Klass, Kimster, and Sleuther on the side. What's your question?
Well, I have a comment. Good evening, all of you.
Good
this
evening.
Is
Good
JoyPath. Hi, it's JoyPath.
Oh, hi, JoyPath.
Hi, JoyPath. Hi. I just thought I'd clarify the situation about a consulting pathologist.
Okay.
When the second autopsy was performed, the medical examiner's office had absolutely no reason or right to be present. The body was entirely under the ownership of the next of kin. They were entirely under the ownership of whomever they wished to perform the autopsy. So
really?
Yes. And the fallacy of believing that somebody on the site is saying that the specimens that Dr. Spitz took should have been returned to the OME. Absolutely not. I have testified. Kimster knows. I think others know about me, too. But
mm-hmm.
No, I'm not verified. My bosses won't let me be.
mm-hmm. No, well, I understand.
Okay, so... But the situation is, the report that Dr. Spitz presented, and my opinion of Dr. Spitz cannot go over the airwaves. You might get my drift.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What he did was absolutely horrible. When a consulting pathologist takes on a case, darn well better be able to make sure that any specimens that they take get tested.
Well, so let me ask you something. What about chain of what do you call it?
It's over. Chain of custody is completely over.
So nothing, if they discover something, nobody can slip something in there and do something to change something. The chain of custody is over, and therefore we don't need to worry about the prosecution or anybody from the prosecutor's office following the evidence that is being used for an autopsy, correct?
Correct. Once my office turns the body over,
mm-hmm.
That's it. I have no more control of that body. Now, if you remember correctly, Dr. Garavaglia has saved a bone. If something had come up in the reports that Dr. Spitz had presented way back in the day, when, right after he had done the post. She could have retested, but since no one got the report from Dr. Spitz until March, and what it said was not worth worrying about, in my professional opinion.
Wow. Now that helps us clarify it. See, I couldn't make that up. That's the truth. That's good. That's very interesting. Mark, you're still with us, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm not here for a second, but I'm back.
Okay, good. Okay. JoyPath, what do you think the cause of death really was for Kaylee Anthony? And can the prosecution truly prove that it was first-degree murder?
That's a big one. I think that they probably will do their damnedest. I do not believe that they're going to end up with getting the death penalty. So I think she may be fortunate in getting life without parole. What is the actual cause of death? It's undetermined, and I've been asked this on the site. Had I had the exact same situation with the exact same information that was presented, everybody in my office have agreed we would have signed it out the same way.
Really? That is
Absolutely.
Interesting. Because I don't know. I can just see where jurors can hold on to that and say, you know, how can they prove it was murder? How can they prove it wasn't an accident? That is fascinating. You've cleared up a lot. And I want to thank you for being on and everything that you offer us. I really appreciate it, my dear. Thank you so much for calling. And call in
anytime.
You're quite welcome.
Quite welcome, and have a spectacular evening. The show is dynamite.
Oh, thank you. Okay, that's
okay.
JoyPath, our wonderful member at Web Sleuth. Let's take one more call. This is area code 207. Area code, where are you? 207. Area code 207, are you with us?
I think I'm with you.
Yes, you are. Who am I speaking with?
This is Why Not, Tricia.
Oh, hi, Why Not. How are you?
Hey, how are you? I'm good. I would like to thank Sleuther on the side and, of course, Mark Klass for being on the show tonight.
Thank you.
Oh, do you have a question, my dear?
I do. My question is, and this is directed to Mr. Klass because I haven't had the opportunity to interact with him the way I have with Sleuther on the side.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that opening statement? I know that it can't be held as evidence, Mr. Klass, but what's your take on the opening statement that the defense team put forth?
Well, I think it was incompetent. I think they put a burden of proof upon themselves that they are not going to be able to fulfill, and I think that it was the actions of somebody who really has very, very little to go on. And that then becomes the problem in a lot of these cases when it's obvious that, of course, everybody deserves a fair trial. But when you have a case like this where there's really nothing, where everything points in one direction, it's really about throwing mud against the wall and seeing how much of that mud sticks. And I think he really overplayed his hand with that. I think he lost a lot of support, if there was any support there to begin with. And he put up some theories that are totally unprovable, particularly if their defendant doesn't take the stand. And it's going to come back to hurt him much more than it could ever have hoped to help him.
Thank you.
Why Not? Thank you. And by the way, Why Not's one of our wonderful moderators who works night and day on the Anthony Forum, keeping everybody in line. So thank you for all you do for Web Sleuth. I really, really appreciate it. You're a sweetheart.
Thank you, Tricia. Thanks, you, Sleuther. And thank you, Mr. Klass. Good night.
take care,
well,
my dear.
Thank you very much, dear.
Bye-bye. Okay, let me give out the numbers. It's 760-825-0933 or 877-665-1565. Sleuther on the side, I want to ask you something.
Sure.
Do you think Kaylee Anthony is going to take the stand? I think she's going to. What do you think?
I haven't made my mind up on this one yet.
I'd like to think that logic would tell us that she should not take the stand, but I really think that Jose Baez's ego and her ego will dictate her behavior, and I think that she will want to do it because she'll find herself invincible, and it, as long as I'm on the stand, I'll tell my side of the story, and then they'll all understand. I think she's really convinced herself that she's believable, and she's not, but I don't think she realizes that yet. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I think that's the way she's been her whole life, because her family has believed her, and I think Cindy has encouraged this behavior. You know, we can go back to the day of when they were at Cindy's brother's daughter's wedding, and Casey is 7 months pregnant and tiny, 90 pounds. She looked huge. And Cindy's telling everybody, oh, she's retaining water. Casey has learned to manipulate the truth to what Cindy wants it to be. And if I may play armchair psychologist here, I think the dysfunction just kind of goes into how Cindy raised the kids. And I'm not trying to be critical. I just think that's a fact, that there's just so much dysfunction there. Doesn't mean they deserve any of this. Doesn't take away from Casey's guilt whatsoever. But I just think that's how she was raised. Mark, you've been in this terrible, terrible club, as you call it, the club that nobody wants to be in, having a murdered child. Even though this is Cindy and George's grandchild, they loved her just like she was her own. Don't you think they've acted a bit peculiar?
They don't have a winning position. They've never had a winning position. They lost a granddaughter that I think everybody agrees they love dearly, and now they're finding out that their own daughter is an absolute monster who's willing to do anything for a little sympathy, including destroying their lives. I would not have behaved as they did, but you know, people behave differently, and I think the result is sympathy on the part of either of the parents in this situation.
All right, let's take another caller. This is area code 303. Area code 303, you're on the air with Mark Klass, Sleuther on the Side, and Tim Sturr. Hi.
Well, hello, this is Grandma Jay.
Hello, Grandma Jay. How are you tonight, my dear?
I'm well, and I hope everyone else is.
We're doing great.
Good. I was calling again on Dr. S., and I listened to that testimony yesterday, and I was totally amazed at some of the claims that he made with absolutely no scientific findings to back it up. And he appeared without even a note. It appears that Jose Baez has told the court that there were no notes taken during the second autopsy. And that's when a very short two-page report was written almost three years later, like 2.5 years after the fact, is the only report that's been presented for his second autopsy. It truly amazes me that a pathologist would not have notes, would not have sent the specimen out for sampling, and then turn around and try and taint the examination of the medical examiner. I was floored by it. It was too much.
So you think the whole thing was just pretty much an embarrassment to the
profession? A total embarrassment. And then Kathy Bellich reported that he, in fact, went up to Mr. Ashton and told him he did a good job.
That's right, he did do that.
His testimony was not credible, and it was not going to be accepted. In fact, Kathy Bellich stated there were two or three jurors that were actually chuckling at some of his theories. And
smirking, and that is
smirking.
Not a good thing.
Yeah.
My understanding... go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, he got $5,000 in the Phil Spector trial, and didn't he say he wasn't getting any money for this? I can't remember. I think he said he wasn't getting anything, but yeah,
well,
I do think what Mark Klass said is right. He is a professional witness, basically. But go ahead, Grandma Jay.
Exactly. But to follow up on what Joypath said, when a MA is finished with their autopsy, they release the body of the decedent back to the family. The family then has to sign a release, at least in my dealings with here where I work, and decide what funeral facility will be given the decedent's body. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is my recollection going back several years is that it was Casey still calling the shots at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Sleuther can correct me if I'm wrong. It seems like there was a long delay in who was going to take care and custody of the cremated remains once Kaylee was cremated. So I think Casey was the one who was still calling the shots about who would perform the second autopsy. And it would have been her that had control over choosing with her defense team who that autopsy was performed by.
You know, that reminds me of the press conference that Jose Baez hosted where he read a letter from Casey stating that she never wanted Kaylee to be cremated. She wanted her to be buried with a headstone so that she would have a place to visit when she got out of jail. And I never mm-hmm. quite understood that press conference stating that Casey did not want the remains cremated because they could not have been cremated without her permission. So it just it proves that the whole, family and next of kin, that's been very, very garbled and jumbled, and I think that it's intentional. You know, there's a reason that the defense has created an issue regarding the next of kin, because I think that they're going to look to that later to say, well, you know, the body was cremated against her will, and now on appeal we can't do further testing because we don't have a body. You know, I call me a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, I think that any little nook or cranny that this defense can weasel their way into, they're going to do it, and they're going to set themselves up for something down the road, even if we don't see it now, even if it doesn't even make sense.
Well, absolutely, and I I'm not familiar with the laws of Florida, but I know the laws here where I work. Every member of the family who is considered a next of kin must sign the cremation authorization here. So Casey is technically the only next of kin. Now, if she were not alive, then it would go to her children. Where her children are not alive, then it would revert back to her, it would revert back to her parents. Now, they would have to be of the age of consent, of course, if she had children. However, you know, in this case, it boggles my mind that this kind of never was answered, because I oftentimes have to go to the prisons through the state or the county to have cremation authorization signed.
And that's going to be an interesting, I think we'll find out what happened with all of that. Maybe after the trial, maybe during the trial, like you said, Grandma Jay, because they might use it and Sleuther on the side, like you suggested, to say, look how mixed up this family is. We don't even know who the parent is and who acts like the grandparent, and it's a big mess. I think you're absolutely right. Grandma Jay, thank you so much
thank
for the
you.
Call. We've got to run here a little bit. Now, Kimster, you wanted to talk a little bit about Haley Dunn. We've kind of all forgotten of all of the cases because of the Anthony case. Do we have any updates on Haley Dunn? Do we know what's going on? I haven't heard anything forever.
Yes, there is something new. But before I get started on that, I do want to let those that are listening that might not be familiar, I do want them to know that Grandma Jay is verified to be a funeral professional, we'll call it.
Absolutely, yeah. She knows
so
what she's
the information,
talking about.
Yeah, the information that she gives is verified information coming from the funeral industry. But, yes, thank you for bringing up Haley Dunn. I do know that we have a member, and I can't get to it right now, so I apologize that I didn't get your hat name. But we do have a member that wanted to ask Mark Klass about this. Haley Dunn was recently given probation for some charges that were recently brought against her.
Billy Dunn.
I'm sorry, Billy Dunn. I'm so sorry. Billy Dunn. And because after she got the charges, she up and moved 250 miles away, and there's rumor that she moved away with Sean. Is that true? Have you heard anything about this, Mark?
Well, I know that Billy is relocated to Austin. I don't know if Sean has gone with her, but she was pretty vilified there at the end in Colorado City. And Colorado City is not a large town. It's really one of those places where everybody knows everybody. And I think once you become ostracized to the level that she was being ostracized, you might have to make a move. I would certainly hope that Billy didn't take Sean with her, because the last thing she needs hanging over her reputation at this point in time is Sean Adkins, a real bad player in anybody's book. And I would also like to point out, I believe, that next week is going to mark the six-month anniversary of Haley's disappearance.
Class Kids has gone into Colorado City on a couple of occasions and done some pretty intense searches, and they've Mark and Brad Dennis have been helping the family and at doing what they do best, trying to get everybody to pull together for the sake of the child. So let's hope that Billy did not move in with Sean. That would just, I don't even know what to say to that, because here you have somebody who is suspected of killing your child, who is abusive. I mean, we can go on and on and on, and it's like, what are you thinking? Let's hope that's not true. And maybe we can find out and post about it on WebSleuths, because I would like to know, too, if that's the case. Unfortunately, it wouldn't surprise me. Would it surprise you, Kimster?
No, it wouldn't, because he has some kind of an appeal to her. I don't know what it is. I hope that it isn't because she's involved in the disappearance of her own daughter. We are talking about Kaylee and Casey, and I'm hoping we don't have the same situation between Billy and Haley. But, some women, sometimes they are just blind. I don't even call it love, because it's not love. It's something else when it comes to men, or the worst case scenario, she is covering up for something that he has done. But I believe that law enforcement in that area, and I think you have said so too, Mark, is that Sean is the number one suspect, and there's no way to get around that. I don't understand why she keeps going back to him, unless it's one of those two scenarios. She's just blind by some kind of emotional problem, or she knows what happened and is accepting it for whatever reason.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that either. I do know that given everything they know about Sean's activities and the kiddie porn that he has, that he should be in prison right now. He should not be walking the streets. I think if he was going to drop a dime on anyone and help recover that young girl, he would have done something at this point. He's done nothing.
Hey, everybody, we've got to wrap things up. Mark, I want to go to you. Tell us about your website, what you're doing, what you want us to help you with. Just tell us what's going on in your life, and unfortunately, we're out of time, so we're just going to have to kind of wrap it up, but I want to find out what's going on with Class Kids.
Well, sure. I mean, Class Kids is KLASKIDS.org. And it gives an overview of everything that we do. I mean, our big project right now is trying to find Michelle Lee. We believe that, we know that she's out there, and we know that whatever her circumstance, she needs to be brought home to her family. And I want to, again, thank WebSleuths for all of the wonderful support they've given us on this case, and hope that as we move forward and eliminate places to search and work with law enforcement, that we're able to ultimately bring this to a resolution and give the family the knowledge of knowing where she is and what happened to her, and that nobody is hurting her anymore.
Well, Mark, you know, we love you, and anything you ever need, like I said at the beginning of the show, we are there for you, and thank you so much. I hope you'll come back again to WebSleuths Radio, because you make my job so easy, and I love that. Thank you,
anytime,
Mark.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Trisha,
on the side.
Trisha.
Yes.
I would just real quickly, while we're talking about Mark's website, in our Resource Center resource area on Web Sleuths. We do have a thread dedicated to Class Kids. You can go there if you didn't get to write down the information that Mark just gave you. You can go there, find the thread. It goes straight to the website. And what's even more exciting is you can discuss what's going on there and share ideas. And it's just a great tool, the Resource Center there. And please feel free to use it to discuss Class Kids. And you could even put things on there about how wonderful they are, because they are wonderful. I love Class Kids.
Thank you, Kimster. And yes, that's what we do best at Web Sleuths, is we discuss and we take things and we figure it all out and we come up with good ideas. So be sure and check out our Resource Center at Web Sleuths. Has a lot of great information in there, including links to classkids.org. Sleuther on the side, my dear, you are so wonderful to come on and give us your opinions. You have been following the Casey Anthony case. Anything you want to say as we wrap it up tonight?
You know, I just want to say that I think that this week we're heading into the home stretch of this trial, and I'm just putting my faith in the state attorney's office and that the jury is going to do the right thing. I won't say what that is, but I'm just going to say they're going to do the right thing.
All right. Kimster, as always, thank you, my dear, for being my co-host and being there, because we know technical issues happen, and you're there to pick it up when that goes wrong. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you on the internet, websleuths.com, Web Sleuths Radio, where we discuss true crime, current events, and we always do it with common sense. Next week's guest, I have no idea, but I promise you, it'll be someone really interesting. Take care. Bye-bye.